You're listening to KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. My name's Taylor Weech. This is Praxis, brand new local politics and action show all about Spokane, Washington State, and a little bit of the U.S. and what's going on here. And as you probably know, most of you, tomorrow is tax day, one of our favorite days in this country. And last week, I was on the air with Kai Hushka of Democracy School and Envision Spokane, and we were talking a little bit about corporate control in the U.S. And one easy way to see how that's manifested is by looking at many of our giant corporations that pay zero federal income tax. And I don't know about you, but I certainly pay federal income tax, and I'm not a wealthy person. I have this interesting study here from the Citizens for Tax Justice, which is a C4 organization that since the 70s has been compiling information like this. Basically, they looked into 280 of the Fortune 500 corporations, and it found that 30 of those companies paid no net federal income tax from 2008 through the present, through 2010. And now, 26 of those 30 companies have still paid none in the 2 years since then. And those include Pepco Holdings, General Electric, Wisconsin Energy, CenterPoint Energy, Boeing, Conway, Verizon, Interpublic, Wells Fargo, and the list goes on and on. DuPont, many of our favorite corporate friends. So, you know, that makes people angry, obviously. And we've seen a lot of action come out of that anger in the last couple of years. And today I am live in the studio with Amanda Hunt, who is an intern with PAJALS. She is an Eastern social work student about to graduate in June. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
Thanks for coming on. You guys have been busy at PAJALS.
Yes, we have.
And if, for those who don't know, PAJALS is the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. How did you get involved there?
I am, like you'd already said, I'm a student at Eastern Washington University, and I am doing my full-time practicum, which is my internship, all this year with the Peace and Justice Action League. I'm very lucky to be able to do so.
Nice. And you guys have an action plan for tax day tomorrow, correct?
Yes. Char Lichty and some of our other members will be up at the STA Plaza from 1 to 3 tomorrow. They'll be handing out literature on military spending for Global Day of Action Against Military Spending up at the plaza.
Nice. So that just happens to coincide with tax day.
Yes, it does.
So there's all kinds of action that people can get involved in. So
yes,
that's more of an educational campaign,
right?
What other kinds of actions does PAJALS work on?
PAJALS works on, it's a multi-issue organization, so we work on police accountability, human rights for Palestinians. We work on peace and economic justice. We also work on death penalty abolition, marriage equality. There's a lot of different issues that we support.
So basically all of the big ones that kind of intersect at this idea of corporate control in a lot of ways. And that's really the thrust of the event you just did this weekend, the 99% Spring Training, which for those who don't know, it's kind of come up a lot in a lot of the news I've been reading and everything. MoveOn.org initiated this concept of putting together a training series for nonviolent direct action, you know, using the imagery of the Occupy movement, not really affiliated in an official way, but definitely building on that energy from last year and continuing now. And they've organized with a huge range. There's a list of organizations that just goes on and on all across the country with the goal of training 100,000 people.
Yes.
To do direct action. And Washington Community Action Network, was one of those organizations who then worked with PAJALS.
Yes.
Great. So you did the training on Thursday and Saturday.
Right.
Just passed. And how was the turnout?
The turnout was really good. On Saturday of last week during the college spring break, me and four other individuals in Spokane went to Seattle for the National Train the Trainers training, which was a great experience. And then we came back and we conducted a half-day training on Thursday night and then Saturday. Thursday night, we had approximately 50 to 60 people present, And then on Saturday, we had about 30. There was a lot of other events going on in town. But the trainings went over great. Everybody that attended seemed to really enjoy it. And it really lifted the energy up.
Mm-hmm. And I was, I've downloaded the training manual. And there's a lot of really interesting content in here. The goals of the training, it says in here, I'll just read it from here. The first goal is tell the story of our economy, how we got here, who's responsible, what a different future could look like, and what we can do about it. The second one is learn the history of nonviolent direct action. And three, get into action on our own campaigns to win change. So that's a pretty succinct list of goals, but a lot to accomplish in one day, I would imagine.
Yes, it was. We all broke off into different areas and presented different sections of the workshop. I did the introduction to nonviolent direct action within communities, and we had a really fun activity where people really got energized by drawing out what they wanted their ideal communities to look like. And then we had instigators that were representing the 1% come around and add big banks and rip the papers up. And so it was really fun. People didn't understand what was going on at first, but it was a really fun activity that people really enjoyed. So
cool. So sort of get the gears turning about how this is manifested in,
yes,
in people's lives. And I think that's really important, the history aspect. It's something Kaya and I talked about last week with Democracy School, but it's really frustrating. I was reading a section last week from the Democracy School curriculum that's an essay about this one activist's frustration with seeing her co-activists constantly caught in these loops of the same things that don't work over and over again. So it's so important for everyone to understand history, but for activists specifically, I think it's huge. So,
oh, I agree. Absolutely. One of the biggest sections was we studied the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, and I presented the Rosa Parks boycott. A lot of people don't really understand that Rosa Parks, that situation with her being on that bus in Montgomery, was not an accident. It was planned. Mm-hmm. It was a planned form of direct action.
It wasn't just that one day she was fed up and didn't get up. She premeditated.
Right. That's an important example from history.
Do you think that that's intentionally de-emphasized when we learn that story?
Of course it is. Yes, I do. I definitely do. Our history books teach us that she was just a tired, elderly black woman that wanted to sit down, and she didn't want to get up when she was, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's not the truth. I mean, you could see there's professional photographers taking photos, mm-hmm, of her sitting there. There is no way that that, yeah, was in any way, shape, or form,
yeah,
accidental.
She was a fed up elderly black woman.
Absolutely.
With a plan to,
yes,
shake things up.
She was actually trained by an organization in Tennessee in the indirect action to do that.
Hmm. So this isn't a new idea of training activists in direct,
absolutely,
action.
Absolutely not.
And when you say direct action, we hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. What precisely is your definition of direct action? We know the nonviolent part.
Direct action is standing up for your rights in a nonviolent manner that does not result in, you know, physical harm to anyone. It's just standing up and saying, you know, we don't want, you know, this to happen anymore. It's not something where you're planning to get arrested or cause any harm to anyone. It's just, it's a direct action where you are just standing up and saying, we're fed up.
So action can mean anything. I mean, an education, mm-hmm, can be an action.
Education can be action. Physical presence, a protest, a nonviolent protest.
Okay. And you cross the threshold into civil disobedience, mm-hmm, when you are disobeying a law through this direct action.
Right.
All right. So, and this curriculum also covers some forms of civil disobedience?
It talks about it, yes.
Okay.
We were not preparing everybody for, we're preparing everybody for direct action, not necessarily civil disobedience. But one of the biggest things that this curriculum teaches is that it's very important to be prepared for all outcomes, especially with direct action or civil disobedience, whichever you're doing, and it's important to work together as a team. That's why training a coalition of people like MoveOn.org and all these other organizations have decided to do is vital in planning these actions.
Mm-hmm. The definition that MoveOn gives in this curriculum is Direct action is how ordinary people organize our resources into collective power. Through direct action, we directly confront, disrupt, or disobey situations, institutions, or laws that we oppose as morally unjust. Basically what you said.
But, kind of, yeah. In a more formal manner.
Yeah, you did a good job. But and the nonviolent part is really interesting, too. I mean, obviously, an organization like Move On wouldn't be putting together a curriculum for violently disruptive action.
Right.
What's your, just as an activist, what's your opinion on nonviolence?
I think it's very vital to show, especially throughout the country, when we are watching the police become violent with protesters, I think it's vital that we demonstrate that we are peaceful. We just want something to happen and we want to change. Whatever that change is that we're advocating for, we want that to happen. We don't need violence to do that.
Definitely. I also really would like to talk about what do you think can be accomplished with direct action? And what do you think we need to accomplish? What do you think the big goal is of all of these movements?
Well, first off, to start off the first question, I think that by us being able to organize together, we will be able to stand up for anything that we. I mean, as a coalition, I mean, one of the biggest things that we're fighting is the 1%, the rich not paying their taxes, corporations becoming people, all of these things. Okay, we can stand up as a collective voice and demonstrate against those things. Rosa Parks and the Montgomery bus boycott, that was not, again, not accidental. That was a planned direct action, and they were able to accomplish a lot with that direct action. I think that if we all got together and we did, you know, direct actions like those in the areas that we're interested in, that it'll have a huge difference and impact. One of the biggest things that we're in our country that we're fighting with right now, like I said, is the 1%. Not paying their fair share. We see it here in Washington State. I work, you know, with Washington Community Action Network on local or on statewide issues. We have, we're lucky enough to have had our legislature close some important corporate tax loopholes. Mm-hmm. But we are not making the 1% in our state pay their fair share, not just in our state, throughout our country. And by advocating for them to pay their, you know, their fair share, one of the biggest things we were able to accomplish in our state is that they are starting to realize that that's an issue in legislature, and they were able to close one of the tax loopholes on big banks. It wasn't completely closed, but they were able to minimize the amount of tax deductions that these corporations are receiving. So people are starting to listen to us.
Okay.
And that didn't, you know, we've done a lot of direct action with Washington Can to push that forward. So that's one of the things that can be accomplished.
That's great. What I was going to ask, I mean,
I'm
glad to hear that they are working towards
yes.
that, because I know I have some cynical tendencies, mm-hmm. and I wonder, especially with Occupy. I mean, I think for a lot of people, when that really blew up last September, mm-hmm. it was really heartening to see all those people doing that, people kind of being awake about the issues going on, and then to see such a clean and simple destruction of it by the corporate media, by the establishment, everything really did a pretty good job of neutralizing Occupy in a lot of ways, at least in the general public's mind that wasn't involved. And where was I going with that? That's just a rant that I'm going on. But basically, it was really disappointing to see that. And it kind of looked as though the entrenched power had so much power that even something like that, even hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, they realized, well, we can squish that down too. So it's good to hear that in Washington State, you know, you're able to have some impact on such a deeply entrenched power structure. Do you think that more direct action is the answer, just continuing to push and push and push with more people?
Yes, I do. I think the larger coalition, or the larger the group of people that are fighting for something that comes together, the more say we're going to have. And I mean, if, you know, these groups are getting, you know, They're getting massive. They're getting larger and larger. People are getting fed up. And I really believe that it's going to take people going to the streets in large numbers, not just in, you know, New York and other, you know, large cities. I think it's going to take everybody. Everybody's collectively is going to have to get together and say, hey, we want to change.
I think another part of it has to be, and this is how we're going to do it. Because that was really the Achilles heel that I saw in the perception of Occupy, at least, was they were really able to say, oh, look, they don't even have a plan. They don't even know what their grievance is. When in fact, you know, the grievance is so large and all encompassing that it doesn't fit in a soundbite. And that doesn't work for the media we have and the level of critical thought, to be frank, you know, that we have in this country.
Right.
So in that way, I think that this training is really great because it kind of helps develop. It's not the plan, but it's here's how to make and communicate your plan.
Right. And that, I think, is critical because there's been a lot of, you know, attempts at different things in Spokane and throughout the country. And sometimes it, you know, I mean, things happen. And I think having a plan is absolutely important. And that's one of the things that we trained in this training this weekend was how to organize a plan, how to give roles, how to you know, conduct a direct action.
Awesome. And who was, what kind of people, what sort of groups were at this training?
Well, we had all different kinds. We had, there were so many different people from all over, you know, the city. There's people that came from outlying communities to join us. We had individuals from MoveOn.org. There were members of the Peace and Justice Action League, Washington Community Action Network members, U.S. Move to Amend. I mean, many, many different ways people had heard about this organization or heard about this training through their organizations that they're affiliated with. And another thing that I wanted to say, too, is that MoveOn.org, even though that they had, you know, tried to publicize this, they weren't the sole creators of the 99% Spring. This was a coalition of, like, over, like Taylor was saying earlier, over 160 different organizations participated in organizing this training. And everybody who attended found it valuable.
Good, good. That's a lot of what I was reading in the lead up to it. I read a lot about a lot of different people's opinions on this, and the word co-opting came up a lot.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't talked to anyone from Occupy locally.
I have.
Is that their sentiment that this is an attempt to co-opt their energy by
many people thought that they thought that MoveOn's trying to co-opt them for the Democratic, you know, voting caucus process. That is not true. MoveOn.org, what they did was they set out the curriculum, they paid for the curriculum, and other organizations, you know, supported it. And it, I mean, we wanted it to be all inclusive. We didn't want to discriminate against, you know, just Dems or just Occupy or, you know, we didn't want, that's not what the vision of this was. It was to get everybody mm-hmm. together collectively to do actions together instead of having multiple, you know, things going on. I mean, I think that this training did a great job of making people realize that, you know, we need to work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. And one of the frustrations I've had with Occupy on a local level, I haven't been super involved, but I was traveling during all of October down the West Coast. So I visited the Occupy camp in every city that I went to that
right.
had one, which was every city I went to.
And
it was very different in every city, but a common thread that I saw everywhere but San Francisco was this dedication to being leaderless that unintentionally, with the best of intentions, you know, I really admire the goal of not having one leader and consensus process. I think the consensus process they were using is excellent, but then it's a slippery slope to becoming directionless when you're leaderless. And a person with a plan isn't a person who's trying to have power over you all the time.
Right.
And that, I think, is the strength of this training, is what it was doing. It wasn't saying, I read through the curriculum, there's no mention of voting even
right.
as an effective action, because most people in Occupy would say that that's not an effective action, I think. You know, I can't speak for all of them. But, I mean, what you're really doing is creating 100,000 people or more who have the potential to lead an action.
Absolutely.
And if people will get behind that philosophically and not think that, you know, oh, someone else is trying to oppress me when it's the people who are working with you, then I think that could be really powerful.
Oh, sure. Absolutely it can be. And that's what we're working towards. Everybody needs to be able to, you know, step into those positions and understand why, you know, we organize to get things accomplished. Mm-hmm. I mean, it worked in history. It'll work now. We just have to get everybody together and motivated and on the same page.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be interesting no matter what happens. When I was in San Francisco, I'm going to try to play a clip. I was lucky, and a day that I was down at the Occupy camp there, Van Jones came down to speak. And for those who don't know, Van Jones is, he was an organizer in Oakland for a long time, which is a bevy of creative organizing. I think it's the best city in the country at organizing. They've had a lot of wins. And he started a group called Green for All. He was training homeless and gang-involved youth in urban gardening. He was really all about green jobs, getting people, you know, particularly young men of color in his community to, instead of being funneled into the prison system, as so many were, being funneled into building a new type of economy that works. So he did all this great grassroots work. And then when Obama was elected, brought him in to the White House with a cabinet position, and basically was ousted within a couple months over his too radical politics, is the understanding that I have of it. So he came and spoke to Occupy there. I'm going to try to play this from my phone, and if it doesn't work, I apologize. We'll see. It's an experiment for me and for you. So this is just a clip of him speaking there. He has a lot of great things to say, and the reaction was very interesting. So let's listen to that.
Time against our future, right there on Wall Street. Right there on Wall Street. To not be afraid of anything. And to see those young people be beaten. See them be pepper sprayed. To see them be mistreated. And not respond with violence, but instead to look the police in the face and say, we're here fighting for you. We're fighting for your pension. We're fighting for you are a part of the 99%. And to watch the cops be shocked. To be met with love at that level. I knew this was going to be a morally powerful movement to what we've been waiting for and wishing for years and years and years. So I just want to thank you for what you're doing. Now look, I know y'all don't all get along with each other out here. Let's just be real about it.
It's true.
I was in the Bay Area for 15 years. We don't all get along. We got different colors, different ideas. Some of us kind of crazy. But you gotta be crazy to make change. You gotta be crazy to stand up to the system.
Yes.
You gotta be crazy to stand up to make a difference. So, when you guys are butting heads out here, you guys are fussing each other out here, don't you forget the whole world's counting on you out here. Don't you forget that. This is about more than just y'all out here. You got people around the world who are looking at this as their only hope in the whole world out here. Don't you forget that out here. We need you out here. This is the only thing that's been able to break through the media blockade, been able to break through the lies, been able to break through the bribery in Washington, D.C. They talk about, oh, we're so concerned about this occupation. We're so concerned about the occupation of Wall Street. No. You should be concerned about the occupation by Wall Street of Washington, D.C. with their lobbyists and their bribery. That's the occupation you should be concerned about. Don't worry about these people out here. These are the good people. These are the most selfless people fighting the most selfish people. That's what this movement's about. But don't...
So that was Van Jones in San Francisco, at Occupy San Francisco, on October 24th, talking to the crowd just before the General Assembly about what Occupy was to him and what he saw it as. You know, it's an inspiring speech. He's great at giving speeches. You can tell that he's spent time in politics. And, you know, I believe that he thinks those sentiments are true. But just after that, I didn't have a chance to edit this video, but just after that, a young man in the crowd, probably about my age, probably 20 years old, started to yell at him and said, "Why do you support Obama? Why do you support Obama's war crimes?" And it turned into this discussion about how can you claim to have these radical politics and say that, you know, we need to make change and topple this system, but you're working on the Obama 2012 campaign, which he is after being fired by Obama himself. That's been a big concern by people. We kind of already touched on it, but the concept of being co-opted by the establishment left and the neoliberal agenda. I guess you already kind of talked about that, Amanda, a little bit. But do you have anything else to add?
Not really. I just wanted to stress that that's not what's going on.
Yeah, I think
it's not a co-option. It's an all-inclusive. It was an all-inclusive training to train as many people as we can in the art of direct action. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's really good to hear from someone who went to the training and heard all of that, and to know that there wasn't a mention of, and then we're all going to vote for Obama, you know, or anything like that. I think people are really, really defensive of Occupy.
Yeah.
And with good reason, because if you look at what's happened to the Tea Party, for example, which in a very similar way to Occupy, I've talked to my dad about this a lot. My dad's into the Tea Party thing. That was, I think, in a lot of ways, truly a grassroots, you know, built out of anger, just like Occupy. I think it was a different demographic who had maybe never experienced very much oppression before. And when the light started to go on that, wow, even we, this more privileged group than many groups in the U.S., are being oppressed by this corporate control. Wow, it's even come to us, and we need to rise up. I think that energy was so neatly co-opted by the radical wing of the Republican Party.
Yes.
That Occupy folks are, you know, justifiably concerned about a similar thing happening.
Right. No, I agree with you. That's absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
One thing that happened during our training was we did have a few people get a little concerned because last month we did a sit-in in Senator Joseph Zarelli's office in the Capitol. And one of the role plays that we do during the direct action was a role play in that took place in his office, where we have everybody remake a role, you know, a direct action, and all have parts assigned and stuff like that. Well, we went ahead and we redid that one. And when we explained that he was a Republican, people were, you know, kind of got that little bit of feeling that, oh, well, they're against Republicans. It wasn't, just to clarify for anybody out there who was at that training and didn't hear the conversation between Mariah and that individual, this was not. That particular situation was a factual event that happened in the Senate where Joseph Zarelli did hijack the floor with three roadkill Dems. Mm-hmm. That really, really did happen. That was not this party's bad. This is, you don't do that in the Senate type thing. So that's why we reacted the way we did.
So you used a situation that actually truly happened.
Yes, we did.
And he happened to be a Republican, but I know that Washington can, at least, is really good about calling out Democrats too.
Yes.
I mean, and my whole thing is that really the differences between the two at this point are so slight that squabbling over it is fairly pointless. And what Van Jones went on to say, his defense, and a lot of people that I've heard on the left, I'm doing air quotes that you can't see, is that what is on the right, I hate using those words, wow, what is on that side of the spectrum is so bad that you need to choose the lesser of two evils to preserve any freedom you may have. And that's what he said, is that even though Obama fired him and lied and all of these other things, that he would rather have him again than any of this other stuff coming from the supposed conservative agenda. What's your take on that?
I think that we shouldn't have to make that choice, is what I think. I think that, I mean, voting for the lesser of two evils is not the way that we should be voting in our country. We should have a set, solid ideals that we follow when we vote. Like, this person represents us in this way, and this is the way that we want to see our country ran, and that's the way that we should vote. I mean, everybody has their own opinions. I'm liberal, you know. I mean, I'll admit it. Everybody knows mm-hmm. that. I'm a socialist. I was called out by Michael Baumgartner, our local senator, and called a socialist. So, anyways, I'm a socialist, and I'm proud to say that. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that, I mean, if I could vote that way, I would, but there isn't really anybody strong running, you know, right mm-hmm. now. So, I mean, it's just who identifies with what our personal values are is who we should be voting for is the way I think.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the way to get it so that someone who reflects your values can be on the ballot? How do you think that can happen locally or nationally? Like, what's keeping them from getting on the ballot?
What's keeping them from getting on the ballot? Local support, mm-hmm. I think, and having enough people to stand up and say, hey, this is what we want, and having someone strong enough to be able to, mm-hmm. they have to have support behind them. There is quite a few progressive liberals in Spokane, and until we, someone's got to step forward,
What do you think? Sorry, I'm trying to decide which question to ask first. My thought, and tell me if you agree, is that a lot of those people who would be voting for that type of candidate, right. On either side, really anyone, any candidate who's not represented by this safe middle ground of
money
that we have now, in different flavors, you know,
yeah,
it's like, do you
Democrat
want,
money or
yeah, do you
money.
Want vanilla money or chocolate money? It's all the same. But, I think a lot of the people who want a third party and who want, you know, or a fourth party or a fifth have already been so discouraged. The people who are serious about it and who would be involved at a level to do campaign management and stuff like that are discouraged by the current system and have withdrawn already. How do you think you get those people back?
Well, we need to let them know that there's still an interest out there. And we need to say, hey, you know, try again, keep trying. We need to reignite their passion for what they're doing and say, hey, we really need this in Spokane, and we need to make them realize that they do. And the only way to do that is to show that we support them.
Yeah. I think the other part is to go in to sort of the back end of the political campaign structure and take away, you know, I think we need a complete campaign finance reform personally, because most of the candidates I know who I would support and who do valiantly run in local elections despite the challenges can't get there, because at the end of the day, the way our campaigns are run, it comes down to money. It comes down to how many signs did you have up, how many times did people see your name, and that's the unfortunate truth. So it's public education and that passion you were talking about, but it also has to be getting the money out of campaigns, because We saw this last election in Spokane, mm-hmm. you know, just how much a well-timed media campaign and a spending campaign can work in an election.
Right. Interesting that you bring that up, because I went through the Democracy for America training to work on campaign issues and for candidates back in February. And one of the biggest things is you have to know how to bring money into your campaign, because if you don't have the money, you're not going to be able to put your voice out there the way it needs to be put out. And that's just, yeah.
So that should be one of our direct action issues, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, and I'm here with Amanda Hunt with PJALS, Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. She's also vice president of the Eastern Washington University branch of PJALS, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And how can people get involved with the work you guys do, both at Eastern and in the office here?
Well, here at the office, and pretty much just stop on by, or you can get online and visit our webpage. Our webpage we have a lot of information about the different issues that we work on, and you can actually get involved by visiting www.pjals.org. You can also stop by the office at any time. We're located at 35 West Main Street. I'm in the community building up in the Mezzane area. And stop on by. I'm usually around at Eastern Washington University. We will be, this is the first year that this club has the Peace and Justice Action League of EWU has existed. We, in the fall, our first major event was a legislative panel, and then now, this week, we're doing a week of action on campus, which is going to be an education series of workshops that involve different issues that we at Pajals are working on. So it'll be really interesting to hear different local community members speaking at the different workshops. But if you want to get involved, that's one way to get involved this week. We have that week going on, which I'll talk more about in a minute. But we, you can also visit our Facebook webpage, Pajals of EWU, on Facebook. And yeah.
Cool. Pajalawoo, I guess.
Pajalawoo.
Yeah, that's
Pajalawoo.
The acronym is still coming, but it sounds good. That's exciting that you're at the campuses. That's something that there's not as much. I don't know what do you think happened to colleges and universities as hotbeds of activism?
I don't know. I really don't know, but I know there isn't a whole lot of it going on out at Eastern. So I'm really excited that we're doing this these workshops on campus to bring out the you know, progressiveness of, you know, I mean, a lot of them have progressive values. A lot of students do, and they have different issues they want to fight for. And I think that each of these series of workshops is just a step towards getting involved in something bigger.
And what is, I'm not trying to call you up, but I'm wondering, what is your definition of progressive? Because I have a huge, I decided when I started this show to make a rule that we can't use the dirty words of liberal, conservative, progressive, left, right, any of these.
And I've used all three.
Things all you, and I waited until the end to call you out. No, I'm just curious about what do you mean when you say that?
I personally believe that progressive individuals are ones that are fighting for vulnerable populations, that want to sustain social safety net programs, that want equality for all, that believe in, like I said, equality for all. And that's, I mean, I think that's progressive, and I think that that's my definition of it.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Just because it's complicated when we have terms like that and we're not all speaking the same language, you know, because some people think that it means all kinds of things, you know.
Right.
And for it to be a blanket term, I think it loses a lot of its potency.
It does.
Over time, because people just hear it and hear it and hear it, and it becomes part of this litany of meaningless words that we have. So I'm excited to hear that you have a definition that's equality based. And how do you think we can get there? No big deal, you know, to achieving these progressive values.
Well, I think that right now, like we were discussing in the past, our political system is split up, you know, into who has the most money kind of campaigns, things like that. They're losing aspect of, you know, what is most important. Is the people of this country most important, or is, you know, or is money? And I think that the way that we can get there is the only way to get there, actually, is we've got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of work in educating people. We got a lot of people out there that think, well, a welfare mom is just utilizing the system. You know, they're lazy, they're, you know, bums or whatever. I mean, we hear this all the time. That is untrue. They're there because our social or our system, our state system is not allowing them to, you know, it's not set up to give them the opportunity to rise up out of that position. And we all know different examples of how, you know, if, you know, like, let's say a single mom, she wants to go to college, she can't get daycare because, you know, we're cutting Working Connections childcare. I mean, those are just some examples. But what we need to do is we need to focus on people, and we need to start educating everybody so that we're all on the same system of helping each other. And that's what we need. We need to treat everybody as equals, despite gender, race, sex,
economic status, religion, any of it.
Yeah, I mean, anything. You know, their sexual identity. I mean, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. We all need to be equal.
Mm-hmm. And I think a huge step is, well, except for corporations. Can we discriminate against corporations? Can we say they're not people?
Yes, I think that we can say they're not people because they are not people.
We can treat all individual human beings equally to each other.
Yes, human beings.
Yes, individual ones. Because the argument can always be that, well, a corporation is just a collection of human beings. So, But yeah, anyway, we could talk about corporate rights all day. But a couple local things going on. We talked last week with Kai about the proposed initiative, citizen initiative process changes at City Hall, which might sound boring, but it's very crucial to your opportunity to participate in direct democracy in Spokane. Through citizen initiative, we've made a lot of changes here. We've changed we did change the water rates that might be being undone. The Envision Spokane group has been able to put forth an agenda that never would have been proposed from inside City Hall and really reflected citizen values. They went out and did a lot of work putting together a community bill of rights. That's just one example. But so basically, I mean, now if you want to, you can get together with a group of people and use our legislative process on the city level, which is the most accessible that we have, to create an initiative. And right now, Councilman Mike Fagan and Steve Salvatore are putting forth a measure to change that process, really adding more barriers, having looked at it, with the ostensible purpose of making our process more aligned with the state process. And it's simple housekeeping, but in fact, it's going to make it more complicated for you or anyone else to put forth their own ideas. So if this is something you care about, which you probably ought to, then there is a public hearing. Anyone is open to testify at 6 p.m. at City Council Chambers. I think 808 West Spokane Falls Boulevard is City Hall, but I could be wrong. It's right there behind the mall. Go through the mall into City Hall. And that is going on tonight at 6. Also tonight, I think you might know about this, Amanda, at City Hall is the non-binding resolution approving gay marriage in the city of Spokane.
Yes. Well, it starts off, there's going to be a march starting at Westminster Church, downtown Spokane, at 5 o'clock, and they're going to march to City Hall. And yes, they will be voting for a resolution, a citywide, or, you know, a city council resolution towards this. So everybody come out and show your support in favor of marriage equality. Yes.
So it's non-binding. So we can't say, we can't pass a law saying that the city of Spokane can marry same-sex couples.
Right.
But it's a...
It's a resolution they can pass on to state legislature and,
So that, because, I mean, since the state has passed it, we haven't seen the backlash quite yet, but it's...
It's coming.
It's yeah, it's fair to say that it will come, as it has in every other state. So this is really just a, like, a proactive step that the city can take. Right.
Absolutely.
To just say, look, our city believes in this.
Yes.
No matter how these people come and
right. They're out there collecting signatures now for referendum 74. So, yes.
Okay. So we'll stay tuned about that and find out about it.
It'll be coming up. We have no, I am not 100%, like, I don't work 100% on that campaign because I've got so many other campaigns I'm involved in. But I do know that, you know, they have to collect like 150,000 signatures. And we're more than sure that they're going to collect them. So we're not worried about, you know, like stopping them from signature collecting. We're more worried about educating people on what to vote for when the election comes up in November. And it does get challenged on the, and we have to vote. So, that makes sense.
What's the point of that? That's kind of a rhetorical question. I just wonder what drives people to
challenge things like
infringe
that.
Infringe upon one another's rights for no reason. But
I agree completely. If it doesn't affect you, you should just, you know, I mean, I'm sorry. That's just the way I feel about it. If you don't like something, but it doesn't affect you, why do you step up and fight against it? You know, I mean, who are you to say that two people that love each other can't get married? You know, who cares if they're the same sex? Who cares, really? I mean, it's like, it's no different than like in other countries when they're doing arranged marriages and you can't stand each other. You know what I mean? Like, why is it okay for them to marry? But then two, you know, but and then people fighting for years to stand up and say, I want to marry who I want to marry. I want to marry who I love. And, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well,
what does it matter?
Hopefully we'll keep fighting, working towards your definition of progressive, which is equality for all.
Yes, yes.
I'm glad. I should make a list. I should make a compendium of people's definitions of these words.
Well, being put on the spot on my definition for that question, yes.
No, it was good. Yeah, sorry I didn't warn you about that.
including social economic status. But
what else do you think are the most important? Because I really like to focus on local all the time, because I think it's my belief that that's where you can affect the most change. I don't think it makes much of a difference who you vote for president. But that's what people get hyped on for some reason, because there's this perception, I think, at least, especially among young people. Maybe you can, let me know if you think that too, being out at Eastern, that city politics, local politics is boring and it doesn't matter. But what do you think the most important local issues are?
The most important local issues right now, I think, are environmental issues, like going on with that tar. I think that's important here in Spokane. I mean, there's a lot of different, anything that affects the people in the city negatively, I think, is an important issue, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, with the way that, you know, our unemployment rates, I mean, sure, they're dropping, but people are also getting kicked off of unemployment. Mm-hmm. So we don't know for sure. But like unemployment rates, the job market, these are all really important things that we need to focus on. Poverty, homelessness. We have a huge homelessness problem in Spokane. There are so many. There's so many individuals that don't even have shelter to go to, you know, like it's raining outside right now and they're living on the streets. I mean,
yeah. How do you think changes like that can be legislated?
Well, I think that we need to get, to be honest with you, I think that we do need to follow the city politics. You know, I think that they are effective. And if they're not, then we need to all be down there, you know, and saying, hey, city council, this is what we want. Because city council's job is to listen to what we want and implement the things that we want. And if that step doesn't happen where people are stepping forward saying, hey, we need to fix this problem, then just like the resolutions that are coming up tonight, you know, and city council, whether it's marriage equality or the initiative, you know, I mean, we need to be there to support these things.
So show up.
Yes, basically. Show up.
That's 90% of life is showing up, and especially in politics, because if you're an armchair politico, then no one's ever going to hear you. You know, if you're just on your Facebook ranting, then your, you know, 400 friends or whatever will hear you. But the real way to do it is to actively participate.
Absolutely.
And if you think it's not a system worth participating in, that's the struggle. I mean, do you tear it down with violence? Do you protest against it? Do you just start building a different one on the side? I mean, those are all the big questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully we can keep trying to tackle that.
Absolutely.
On this show and in general.
Right. One of the biggest things that really irritates me is the lack of interest that youth in this city, like even people my cohort at Eastern in the social work program, what bothers me is the people's lack of getting involved, their lack of paying attention to politics, paying attention of what's going on around them, whether it's in the community, the state, or, you know, nationally. They're not paying attention and they're not voting and they're not, you know, letting their voices be heard on issues that they're really passionate about. And they're just like, oh, I don't care because my vote doesn't matter. That drives me insane.
Part of it is the whole focus on voting, I think, because that's a huge, all I really remember of what civics education I may have received in public school was vote, 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 vote. And we also learned about, I mean, we did learn about the civil rights movement, but in a very glossed over way where at least I never really grasped the concept of, you know, this is just people deciding that we have power and we're going to assert it. That wasn't really the focus. It was about, they really kind of made it seem like, oh, you know, Rosa Parks didn't get off the bus and Martin Luther King gave all these good speeches. Right. And then it just magically happened. It wasn't really a focus on, this was organized by thousands of people working together. And I think that's really important. There's a strategy
and tactics.
And I think there's an intentional de-emphasis on that in our education system and just in the way that civics is presented, where your option, you get to participate through voting. And that's it. And if the voting didn't work and if the person you voted for doesn't support you, then give them a call. And it kind of stops there. It's like vote and then call the people you voted for. And I'm really interested in trying to get young people especially, but all people, especially the cynical old people and the cynical young people, to realize that there's so much more they can do and no one's stopping them
right.
from doing it.
Right.
Until you're at the protest and there's a police barricade. But
right.
you can do a training and find out how to deal with that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of a rant, but a true one.
That's understandable. That's one thing that's we're really excited about this week of action is some of our workshops are really, we've got Know Your Rights with the Police being done by Dr. Ed Burns, the director of the undergrad social work program.
Great.
And some other local friends and attorneys are going to be joining him on that. And then, yeah. So, I mean, Tuesday, Washington Community Action Network is going to train on how to start a grassroots movement from scratch.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
In one day.
Yeah, one day. Well, in 2 hours, to be honest with you. And then Wednesday's Palestine Human Rights on Wednesday. Thursday is they're going to train on how to influence people in power and how to communicate well with others. And that's going to be a local resident, Bart Hagen, is going to be training that. And then on Friday, Alyssa Henderson, the other intern, and I are going to be training on how to start a rally, including how to organize media coverage for the event, how to assign roles, and, you know, how to start those things. So
wow.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. And it's 6 to 8, Monday through Friday this week at the JFK Auditorium in Cheney. And
great.
It's free.
And there's a bus to Cheney, so it's $1.50 or price of gas to go. And that is open to non-students as well?
It's open to everybody.
Anybody person. Equality, yet again.
Yes.
See, look at
yes.
this. Great. Is there anything else you want to add, Amanda, before we say goodbye?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Oh, one thing is that the tax day action taking place tomorrow starts at the fountain at Riverfront Park at 2 o'clock. So hope to see everybody there to put those good 99% spring training tools that you learned about in use.
Mm-hmm. And you can download that curriculum also or probably come to Pajals and they can help you
absolutely.
Get the materials or find out more about how to do a training. Thanks again. We've been with Amanda Hunt, practicum intern at the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. I'm Taylor Weech, your host, and this has been Praxis. We're putting theory into action every Monday at 10 a.m. Next week, I'm going to be talking to a dear friend of mine who just caucused with the Republican Party. That should be really interesting. We take all sorts here. So we will be talking to him and finding out how that citizen initiative hearing went. That's tonight at 6. Tonight is a very interesting city council meeting to go to. If you've never been, they're open to everyone since you live here. Have a great Monday, and thanks for tuning in.